We appreciate you taking the time to join us as we begin another important season of discussion surrounding the management and future of Yukon River salmon. My name is Serena Alstrom, Executive Director of the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association, and it is my pleasure to serve you as your host throughout the teleconference season. These calls will be held every Tuesday from June through the end of August throughout the season. We will provide updates on Yukon River salmon run assessments, environmental conditions, research and monitoring efforts, and ongoing management activities. I'd like to extend a warm welcome to all new participants joining us today. We also encourage young fishers to participate in these calls to learn, engage, and become involved in Yukon River fisheries, issues, and management. These teleconferences provide an important opportunity for people from across the Yukon River to share observations, concerns, and local conditions. Search fishermen, tribal representatives, researchers, managers, and community members to actively participate. Your knowledge and experience help build a broader understanding of the challenges facing our salmon and river communities. We'd also like to thank our funding partners, the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission and the Tana Chiefs Conference, for their continued support in making these calls possible. For many years, these teleconferences have served as a communication bridge between local users and fishery managers across the 2,200 miles of the Yukon River. As salmon declines and changes, river conditions continue to affect our communities, the need for open communication remains critical. However, the challenges we face today require more than information sharing alone. They require collaboration, problem solving, and action. Our goal is to ensure these calls remain a platform for meaningful discussion, actionable feedback, and collaborative solutions that can be shared with management agencies, organizations, and decision makers. By working together, we can identify practical opportunities to improve fishery management and support the long-term health of the Yukon River salmon. As we move through the 2026 season, I ask that all participants be respectful of one another. This is a space for constructive dialogue and shared learning. By listening to and supporting one another, we can foster productive conversations that benefit our fisheries and communities. Guyana, for your time, participation, and commitment to the Yukon River. The Yearfoot In-Season Subsisting Salmon Survey is currently getting started. We thank National Park Service and NOAA for funding the program this year. This year, the surveyors are utilizing a digital app version of the program, and we hope to make it available to the public soon. We will update everyone when it is ready to download from the App Store. We want to encourage fishers in the in-season survey communities to reach out to their local surveyor and share what they are seeing on the river. This program is a way for fishers to anonymously share their observations as well as their concerns or challenges they are seeing with the managers and the rest of the river. The in-season survey communities include Alapana, Mountain Village, Marshall, Russian Street, Andes, Uslia, Ruby, Tanana, Fort Yukon, and Eagle. And just some housekeeping before we get started. Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to mute and unmute. Background noise and conversations are disruptive to callers who are sharing important information. Again, welcome everyone. I am doing this call in Emonic, and I do have some special guests here in the office with me, and I'd just like to have them introduce themselves before we get started.
Hi everyone, I'm Vanessa Von Vila. I'm a research fish biologist with the USGS Alaska Science Center. I'm based in Anchorage, Alaska. Happy to be coming from Monarch today.
Hi, I'm Adeline Heath. I'm from Coplick. I'm here with why our DFA is doing the biotechnician training.
Hello, I'm Cody. I'm from UAL, and I'm here with your colleague doing fisheries training.
Hi, I'm Emerson Wheel from Ruby, and I'm also doing fishery training.
Hello, I'm Mike Parker, and I'm the assistant area manager on the Yukon.
Hi, my name is Andrew. I work as a Fish and Wildlife Tech Board here on the Yukon.
Hi, my name is Holly Carroll. I'm the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in-season federal manager, and I'm so happy to be back in Emonic here with you guys.
Yeah, hi, I'm Fred West, the summer season research biologist with Fish and Game.
Hi, I'm Rachel Kingis, and I am with YRTA, and I'm the training education project manager. Nice to be here. Thanks.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Dina John with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the Yukon River Summer Season Fishery Managers, and I've been going and doing these YRTA calls for a long time, but never before in person next to Serena, so this is awesome.
Thank you guys for joining in person today. It's a pleasure to have you guys here with me in person. I've always done this by myself in my little office at home, so it's great to have other people surrounding me today. Before we get started, I'd like to ask if there is any media on the line today, so please announce yourself. Do we have any of our government representatives or staff members on the call today?
Yes, this is Eric Tiernan with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, AYK Regional Management Coordinator. Good afternoon, everybody.
Welcome, Mary. Just a reminder.
Hi, Serena. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Brooke Fisher with the Division of Subsistence. Thanks.
Great. Thank you for joining us. Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your device. And if you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to mute and unmute. I'd like to begin with the Yukon Area Managers from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I will hand it off to Dina.
Yeah, hi, this is Dina John with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. So for the fisheries management actions, we're continuing to follow the actions that we'd kind of planned out preseason. Unfortunately, the salmon runs for Chinook and summer chum salmon look like they're still coming in pretty low. They look like they're coming in so far close to what we had forecasted, although it is very early in the run. We haven't really seen a big pulse or a big group of summer chum or Chinook yet. Counts down here in the Lower Yukon test fishery have been pretty low. We've had a couple drifts where they've gotten maybe 15 or so, but a lot of the catches have been zeros. Pilot station sonar has been in operation, and those counts are shared in the weekly update we just published and also on Facebook and on our phone recording. So unfortunately, it does still look like the runs need a lot of conservation efforts this year, and so we have been closing fishing for subsistence salmon. Those closures of gillnets have been announced up through sub-district 5 ABC and also in the Tanana River. So right now, you know, you can still fish with 7.5-inch gillnets in 5ABC, but that's going to close. And at that time, you can just continue to fish with your 4-inch or smaller nets for non-salmon and use other gear types for non-salmon, like hook and line and dip nets and deep seines. But all Chinook and summer chum have to go alive. And as folks may recall from last year and from our preseason outlook, we're also closing fishing with all gillnets during the bulk of the Chinook salmon run. And so those closures of all gillnets have been announced up through sub-district 4A. And so if you've got any questions about when you have to take all gillnets out of the water, you can definitely call the toll-free hotline at 1-866-479-7387. And that you can go through the menus and hear the information for your district. You can also call the Fish and Game office down here in Emonic at 907-949-1320, and we can help you to know what's available to use in your area for fishing for non-salmon and what your restrictions are. So it's always a shame when we have to close fishing for salmon, but we are trying to protect them and let them go by and get up to where they go spawn. With that, I'll turn it over to Fred West for a brief assessment update, and then I think Holly for more fisheries management from the Fed side.
Yeah, so as Dina just mentioned, at LYTF for summer chum, the catch rates have been below average, but as you mentioned, they picked up a little bit, so there might be some fish passing through and heading up the pilot. And also, we don't have enough information in season data available yet to project kind of the run, so still early days on that. But it does appear that so far Chinook may be more normal timing so far, but it's still kind of hard to tell. For specific numbers, we've got, I guess the LYTF is for both the Millmouth and Big Eddy are below average, with only like CPUE of 58 compared to like 251, so below average. And for Pilot Station, they've been operating since the 7th of June, and the passage for SummerCHUM currently is 12,120 plus or minus 2,400 fish. That's well below the median of 47,000 at this point in the run. And for snook salmon passage, the estimate is at 9,575 plus or minus about 4,000. And the median, historical median or average run is around 20,000 fish, so below average. And there's also a disclaimer that these passage estimates will change because of the catch rates or test fisheries, having to pool some of the data occasionally. Let's see. I guess just mention that we are continuing to collect biological information from Pilot to monitor for different fish diseases and such. So continue to do that. There's the ANVIC sonar is projected to start operating anytime now. I think they're on site starting to set up the camp. And we're also going to be starting a radio telemetry project for snook. And we hope to start tagging up in the Rampart area by the end of this week. So, if you have any questions about that, you can call Josh Clark at 907-267-2217 or myself at 907-267-2237. And good enough for now. Thanks.
Thank you, Dina.
And Fred,
sorry. Now that I have guys in person, I'm like, okay, my one's like, I'll turn it over to Holly Carroll.
Thanks very much. I don't have much to add other than to say, you know, I want to put it out there that, you know, like Dina said, we've had these closures in place for years, and we understand that this is when people should be fishing and filling their smokehouses. We understand that this lack of food gathering, this lack of fish camp family time, traditional value sharing, what it's doing to the economies, the families, the cultures here, it's devastating. And we can't understate that enough. Like we're spewing out a bunch of numbers. We're trying to get you the information you need to understand why we're closing. But I just want to put that heartfelt message out there that this is incredibly hard for us, especially being in Eumonic and seeing people that we have seen get fish for years have none. It is very hard, and I just want you to know that as a reminder, we do this to protect these salmon for future generations. And even though we've been doing it for 5 years and we all think we should have seen an improvement, we got to hang in there, and we just got to keep doing what we're doing and try to get as many of these upriver to the spawning grounds as we can. So I just want to thank all of you that have been advocating for salmon, all of you that have been speaking out in public forums and regulatory processes, all of you that have been standing down from fishing, and all of you that are turning to other food sources like your non-salmon, fishing in other areas. I know those are costly. I know those are not what you want to be doing. And we can't thank you enough for your conservation and your involvement. So thanks again.
Thank you, Holly. We will now turn it over to the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada. Do we have Jacqueline Kendall or Adam O'Dell on the line?
Hi, Serena. This is Jacqueline Kendall, and I believe Adam is on the line as well. So I'll let Adam start with a bit of a stock assessment update, and then I will follow with a brief management update. So I hope I'm coming through okay. Yeah, everyone can hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, Jacqueline.
Okay.
Adam, yeah, Adam Waddell here, senior fisheries biologist with Fisheries Notions Canada in Whitehorse. So we're still a little early in our season. We're still ramping up and onboarding staff and preparing for mobilization of our assessment projects this and next week. So this Friday, we're still on schedule to have folks fly up to Old Crow and begin opening the Porcupine River sonar cam just downstream of Old Crow. So that should be actually operational. The sonar should be estimating passage before the end of this month, assuming that conditions are adequate and don't hit any snags. And then next week we have some staff traveling to Eagle, Alaska to work with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game staff to open up the Eagle sonar camp and get that one up and running for the beginning of July. In addition to these two camps right now, there's a number of assessment projects that Yukon First Nations have planned for this coming season. There may or may not be some Yukon First Nations managers on the line who could speak to these, but I think it's still a little bit early for their season two, so they may not be online today. But there should be some sonar programs coming online within the next 2 weeks or even sooner, and then progressing throughout the season as you go upstream. So there is a good half dozen to, you know, 6 to 8 projects that should be running with Yukon First Nations this year once again. And we're hoping that throughout the season to provide updates on not only our own DFO and Buntuk Gwich'in First Nation projects, but then I'll also provide the opportunity to update on any Yukon First Nation projects in the absence of managers being able to provide those updates themselves. So that's kind of the wrap on our update for stock assessment. Hopefully next week we'll be able to provide a little bit of a different update, but really nothing is going to change for another couple of weeks until we start seeing some numbers and being able to provide an update that way. And now, I mean, just briefly, an environmental condition update. I think last week I said that the temperatures were starting to increase quite a bit, and some of the snowpack that had been lingering through a cooler spring has started to melt a bit more, and then water levels, which were previously pretty low in some areas, have been bumping up. So, I mean, we have been experiencing, I would say, a little bit cooler but more average air temperatures of late across much of southern Yukon and across much of the Yukon, for that, that being said. And so the melt has been, I would say, steady but not ramping up, and there's really no flood conditions, I think, to speak to. I think there might be there might have been a little bit of a concern in the Teslin about potential flood levels rising to previous peak levels, which may have caused some damage, but I think that has subsided. So in the absence of that, things are pretty much average. It seems pretty low-key in that sense, and I mean, we'll continue to monitor water levels, but then also water temperature when we get some of our programs up and running, and report to those throughout the season as well. So that's all I have for now. I'll let Jacqueline continue on with the management update. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Adam. Again, hello, everyone. My name is Jacqueline Kendall. I'm the Acting Operations Manager for the Yukon River with the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. And in terms of Canadian management, there's no changes to management actions to report at this time over last meeting. We continue to work towards finalization of the written 2026 Canadian management strategy. We hope to have that completed and published to the Fisheries and Oceans website by the beginning of July. So we're working towards that. And with the really low preliminary Canadian origin Chinook forecast, we have closed the recreational fishery in Canada, and the current closures in the commercial and domestic fisheries will remain in effect.
And then the only other update is that as of next week, we will be embarking on our first domestic intergovernmental in-season conference call. So that's where we get to share updates on the information collected by the current assessment programs, and we also receive feedback on some of the plans and activities of the individual Yukon First Nation governments for the 2026 season. So that's the brief management update and SOC assessment update. Serena, thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jacqueline and Adam. We will move on to our organizational reports. Do we have anyone from the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission online? Do we have anyone from the BBAYK Coalition online?
Hi there, this is Karen Gillis.
Hi, Karen, welcome.
Thank you. This is Karen Gillis with Bering Sea Fishermen's Association, and we manage a weekly teleconference on Thursday morning with a group of folks from Bristol Bay, the Arctic, Yukon, and Kuskokwim regions. We do limit the attendees to people who live in the region, so our, you know, like residents, as well as folks who work for organizations that serve the region, primarily tribal organizations or organizations like YIRDFA. And so this week we've got someone who is going to be speaking to us about with a short presentation from, his name is Ben, I think his last name is pronounced Mocklove. The discussion will start at 9:30, and we'll be talking about some stock identification work that he is doing, which is relevant to stocks in the coastal Western Alaska grouping. And so anyway, if folks are interested in attending, you can email me. My email is karen@bsfaak.org, or my phone number is 907-887-1148. And attendance to the BBAYK meetings are sort of by invitation only. And so I'd be happy to add anybody to the mailing list, and those invitations go out every Wednesday. Thanks, Serena.
Great. Thank you, Karen. We'll move on to the Yukon River and Tribal Watershed Council. Do we have anyone online today? Elizabeth McDonald from the Yukon First Nations is not able to join us today, but she did provide a report that I'll read right now. She said, last week we were out setting temperature loggers across the Yukon River. Water levels were low in the Whitehorse area, but high at the other locations we visited. Several of the smaller creeks in Pelly River had some impressive breakups. The banks were scoured with the ice, or by the ice, taking out trees and other growth along the shore. On the Pelly, large divots were left by the ice pushed up on shore. One logger was lost due to the bank erosion, and one logger was found despite the tree. It was anchored to being cut at the base by the ice. We saw baby Chinook salmon at one of the sites. The weather started off really nice, but then we had thunderstorms and rain on this last on the last 2 days. First Nations are working with Department of Fisheries and Oceans to deploy and telemetry towers for the Chinook tagging season. We don't have the funds to participate, but at least we can lend out the equipment. This week, we are hosting a sonar training week in Whitehorse for our First Nations led by sonar project. And that is the end of her report. We'll move on to the Yukon Salmon Subcommittee. Do we have anyone online? Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute. And if you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. We'll go ahead, Yurtha will go ahead and provide a report. Like I said at the beginning, we do have some guests here with me during the teleconference. My first time doing it live with others in the room. We have our biotechnician training that started in St. Mary's, and we're here down in Emonic. The training will end on Thursday. We have really good participants this year learning a lot and already asking about employment along the river. Our educational exchange will begin July 23rd in Anchorage. We have five participants from Canada coming to Alaska, and we will make our way back here to Emonic, take a boat trip up the river, visit a fish camp, and on our way to St. Mary's and Pilot Station. We'll go ahead and move into our community reports. I'll be calling by district. Again, please mute and unmute your line by pressing star 6. We'll start with the coastal communities of Chivac, Hooper Bay, and Scammon Bay. Again, do we have anyone from the coastal communities of Chivac, Hooper Bay, or Scammon Bay on the line? Okay, we'll move into District Y1. Nunam, Alaganak, Imanak, Kotlik.
Hello, good afternoon, Marvin and Kotlik.
Hi, good afternoon. We'll go ahead and start with Marvin Okitkun from Kotlik and move on to John Lamont.
Hi, good afternoon. We finally had some south winds the past couple of days here in Kotlik. Had the water come up like a 5.5 foot tide, 5 foot tide today, this morning, finally, near bank level, so. And usually with the south wind and cloudy skies, usually fish come in, but there's nobody fishing, so we can't tell. Not even with 4-inch nets that I know of. Nobody's talking about it or anything. Everybody's wishing, like the whole Yukon River, that we could go out and subsist this time of the year before the weather turns to crap when the rainy season comes. It's pretty sad. This year's the worst, I think. There were no herring eggs to go pick up in Devon, St. Michael area this year due to ice. They said there's some now, but it's pretty late in the season. Let's see, besides that, before the tide came up, when the water level drops, it's like near, here in Kotlik, it's like almost fall season. There's sandbars showing on each side of the river, like 20 feet out. So the lack of rain around here, the water level really drops. That's it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Marvin. We'll move on to John Lamont.
Serena, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Okay, I have a couple of questions for ADF&G, but before I give a report on what I've heard so far along the coast. So can I ask the questions first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I know ADF&G biologist Mr. West had said Chinook is normal timing this year. With a late breakup, normally we have later timing. And so I just wanted to get that clarified. Is it expected to be normal, the run timing for Chinook, or is the department playing in on the later run? That was the first question for them. And then I have a comment regarding them. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So far the run timing looks to be normal, just with the more ice cover and colder temperatures. It seems like it's just kind of gut feeling. It seems like it's a more of a normal timing in the way the runs are starting to line up. If it's normal, it seems like it's coming in as expected. If it's late, then it might be bigger than expected. So I mean, it's still really early. So that's just my feeling. Is it seems like it's normal timing right now, and it could change, obviously.
All right, thank you for that, Mr. West. The other comment I have is the last three summers I've been down in Nelson Island, and this year I'm not down there, but I'm getting reports of a lot of Chinook being harvested along the Cape there on Nelson Island. And those harvesters are from like Makoriak and Shafornik and Tuksuk and Nuchtuk and Mahtavik in that area, Nightmare. But anyway, they're saying there's a lot more, beside the Cape land coming in at the same time, there's a lot more Chinook. And so that may be a good sign for the Yukon, and I wasn't really sure how many days in ocean water do Chinook travel. And then if you could, for the last, I don't know, it's been since, for the last 4 days, they've been doing pretty good there. So, and that's a good sign. I just want to say, you know, if this is a late run time, and we might be getting our main run, toward the 25th of Chinook, between the 25th and 27th of June for the Y1 area. But other than that, I forgot to identify myself in the beginning. I'm an alternate panel member from Y1 and a historical salmon user on the Mouth of the Yukon. Thank you, Serena, and that's all I have.
Great. Thank you, John. Do we have anyone else from District Y1, Nunam, Lovenup, Monarch, or Kosick on the line? We'll move into District Y2. Do we have anyone from Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's, Pilot Station, or Marshall?
Hi, Serena.
Yes, is this George?
Yeah, this is George. I was just listening on what's being talked about, and I don't really have anything. Pretty quiet around here, as far as I know. I haven't heard anything, hardly anybody going out, and a few people got some 4-inch sets out, but I haven't heard any buzz over anything going on around here. I just wanted to reiterate what John had said about we did hear some talk or some stories of the people down in Nelson Island getting they were done fishing for the summer, both the herring and the salmon fishing, and I was surprised to hear that they got quite a bit of things down that way, and it's good for them, but I wish we could get some of them too. But that's all I got. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, George. Do we have anyone else from District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictures Point, St. Mary's Pilot Station, or Marshall on the line? Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line if you are using the mobile device. If you're using your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to mute and unmute. It's quite different when you have people looking at you and listening to you while you're doing the teleconference. We'll move on to District Y3. Do we have anyone from Rush Missioner of Holy Cross or Shagos on the line?
Hello?
Hi, Basil. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, guys. This is Basil up at Russian, first up in Y3. Water is finally dropping slowly but surely. A lot of the meadows are starting to drain out on the south side of the river anyways. And with this high water, we were able to access some different locations and try to look for egg, kind of like in non-traditional places where we don't usually get to go this time of the year. But we did go out to, we call it Clip. It's a creek on the south side of the river, and it snakes up between here and the hills toward the Kuskokwim, and it heads up toward like 12-mile Paiute area. But anyways, we got to a dead end there, and it's just a big, usually just a big grassy meadow. But there was a lot of water still draining out of this big meadow. And when you go walking around a little bit, when we go walk around for eggs, there was a lot of landlocked whitefish, pike, chiefish, lush, blackfish. All that stuff was just landlocked, and they're running out of water, and a lot of them were dead already. A lot of them were still flopping around on land. So that's there's the second flood in 3 years. We had one in 2023, and it was same thing. Then this year, 2026, a lot more people were kind of looking out for little things like that since the last flood, especially since we were cut off from salmon, harvesting salmon, and we do harvest other critters. So when people were out looking for eggs and muskrats, they noticed a lot of landlocked whitefish, and the sustainability of those ones came to question because of these floods. We know it's not the state's fault or anything like that, or managers, but you know, just the sustainability of these whitefish are coming into question now more and more. But there's no sticks in the river. A lot of the logs are basically up on land way inside the meadows. So when you go logging around here, it's slim pickings, man. But we do have a lot of standing timber, and we're not in dire needs of wood just yet. But generally, there was more than not only my boat, but other boats, other egg hunters came to me and told me what they saw, and we told them what we saw, and that plus a lot of dead moose with their stomach bloated. You could see some that were starting to get eaten by bears and stuff, but a lot of these moose were bloated stomachs and floating. Nothing started eating them yet. So in every creek we go to, pretty much, not a lot, you know, not every bend like when we see a live moose, but noticeably, you know, there's a lot of dead critters out there that are not even being eaten. So there's not much fishing going on. There's a lot of trying to hustle to get some logs to rebuild camps, but like I said, the water's slowly residing. It left the bank and the beach all sticky. The mud is still real sticky, so to get to the lower camps, at least here in town, you have to drive through every damn fish camp there is. So on the way, and the fish camp owners are not liking that too much, because if we do get a chance to start harvesting fish and using our fish camp, then that's just going to be a lot of dust that's going onto our fish, and we're trying to avoid that. So, but not, like I said, not everybody has a 4-inch net. Not everybody has a dip net. Not everybody has a boat. Not everybody has the means to get these. So, like I said, last teleconference, every household had a fish camp, and now it's one household out of a whole family tree that has a operating fish camp. And the only thing that was keeping our fish camps going was the freshwater fish. And now we can't even do that anymore. So I haven't been doing any surveys. Like I said, you know, it's kind of like putting salt and pepper on a wound when one of your own is asking another one of your own how's fishing, and we all know we're not fishing. So we're all hurting for that. We all feel we all abide by the rules and regulations. We all respect that. We all follow them. And I've been saying this for a couple of years, that nobody wants to eat salmon back more than the natives along the Yukon River. And us following the new rules and regulations every year shows our commitment. We just would like to see the rules and regulations extended out to everything that affects our salmon. Like the managers were saying, you know, whatever enters the river, we got to protect it on the way up. Well, you know, if you kind of protect them out there, then more will enter the river and more will hit the spawning ground. So that's just the general thought here. And Alaska's rules and regulations, you know, the manager's got a job to do, and we all know that they don't make the rules and regulations. They follow the chain of command. So, but Alaska's rules and regulations are set up to cater the corporate giants like the oil industry and the fish exporting industry. So we know we're up against a battle bigger than what any individual can overcome. But we're all on the same page. Last few years, we all know that we're not the ones harvesting any salmon. There's been next to no salmon harvest along the Yukon River in the last, I'd say, 10 years, but more so in the last 5 years. And we'd like to see these rules and regulations extended out, like I said, extended out to everything that affects these salmon. And I know for a fact that the punishment's so harsh for in-river fishermen that do go out and try to harvest a few salmon that it totally cripples our ability to go out and harvest all the other species that we do go after throughout the season. So, you know, little things like that we're waiting for to extend out to the Bering Sea fishermen, because we feel that's where all the fish are getting caught and not reaching the rivers. We also noticed that there's a lot less predators on the south side of the river anyways, like wolves, bears, lynx, fox. There's not much critters left on the south side of the river due to the last couple floods. The water was so high that there's rolling hills or like bluffs between here and the Kuskokwim River. The water was all, you could drive clear, you could drive straight to that bluff from the Yukon River through the winter trails that we call Blyrucks with, you know, snow machine trails. I know my fellow natives know what that is, but the managers, that's a winter trail cut out for snow machines to get through the trees. We were driving our boats through that in 2023, and then this year we drive straight out to almost to the Kuskokwim River, or to the Johnson River that connects to the Kuskokwim River. So a lot of that, we did see a lot of animals like bears, moose, lynx, fox. They were all just chilling out on the bluff, what I just explained out there, not trying to hunt each other, not trying to, you know, go after each other. They were just like shocked like us, trying to survive and chilling out there. That was the only dry land there was for at least like 2 weeks here, and that extends from us on up to, like, Holy Cross got the worst of the flood. Their runway was under for a few days. Our runway came up in the flood of 2023. Our runway went under for about a week. And then since then, the state of Alaska put a 6-inch lift kit on our runway. So the middle of our runway wasn't underwater, but everything else was. So we were able to go out and see a lot of this damage that is happening, that did happen from the flood. And that the sustainability of moose, bears, and spots for birds to lay eggs, all that kind of stuff. We weren't even able to harvest any muskrats. Usually, a few years ago, or the last piece of traditional clothing that my mom was able to make for my kids was because I was able to go out springtime and get probably 200 muskrats in one trip. And we do utilize the meat, and my mom was able to make a malachi, some mittens, and a little parky for one of my boys when they were little. And that's another subsistence critter that we usually utilize this time of the year, right before fishing, changing of the diet kind of stuff. And so we weren't able to do any of that. We weren't able to get much eggs, not even seagull eggs. All the islands they're still finally starting to show up now that the water's dropping. And just barely, the islands are just like barely starting to show. So up all these years, all the moose food, the moose eat the willows till they're the size of a pencil, and all those willows grow on all the sandbars and islands, but all those went under. And so springtime, another thing that folks like to do around here to earn a couple bucks is to run out there to these islands and sandbars and run around and pick up all the antler sheds, and that usually helps them with the gas money for fishing and, you know, the whole nine yards, whatever comes next. So a lot of that traditional stuff is cut off with these last two floods. And since the flood of 2023, we noticed that there's not as much lynx, not as much beaver, or there's a lot of beaver, but muskrats, lynx, fox, things, critters that live on the south side of the river. We noticed that a steep decline in those, and that's starting to worry us now that we had a second flood in 3 years. And we saw how hard all those things were crippled by the first flood, and then now they're going to have to deal with the second flood, not even a couple years later. So, yeah, the sustainability of not only salmon, you know, that's fresh in our mind, but the sustainability of moose and the other main critters that we harvest year-round and keep us alive, those are starting to, that's starting to weigh heavy on our minds. And another thing I got to reiterate, I guess, is that I was born in the 80s, so I grew up hanging a net, mending a net, you know, drift net, set net, all that. And kids born in the 90s got a little taste of it, but, you know, nowadays it's a lost art. You got to walk. Like, when I was young, everybody was doing it. Every house you go to, every fish camp you go to, you're either, you know, hanging a net or mending a net. Now it's a lost art. So a lot of this stuff is starting to weigh heavy on us. And the fact that, the no salmon, no returning salmon is, the subsistence users are getting the blunt of the blame for that. It's affecting our, not many fish camps are rebuilt this year, and it's, all the rules and restrictions on freshwater fish last few years kind of crippled our mindset to go out and use these freshwater fish to keep our fish camps going, to, you know, just to pass the tradition down. So we're really starting to feel it out this way. especially out here where gas is right now. The barge hasn't reached yet. We're at $7.50 a gallon. It's probably going to double by then. But, and the price of food, too. Everything has gone up in the store. You know, a gallon of milk is probably 20-something bucks now. So we do try to subsist as much as we could just because we grow up out here, and that's, you know, the precious food we get. And then now with all these rules and regulations, we're forced to go to the store and buy, you know. Usually you could get a week's worth of gas or a couple of days' worth of gas and go get a month's worth of food out there. And now we've got to go to the store and buy probably one. You'll be lucky to pay for one of the meals throughout the day when what we used to be able to spend to get a whole month's worth of food out there. So all this kind of stuff is weighing heavy on our minds and our hearts, and we're waiting for the state of Alaska to extend the rules and regulations out to everything that affects our salmon so that these salmon will come back in numbers that they've been saying for the last 24 years since, see, I first started tagging salmon in 2002 when I was fresh out of school. I was a boat captain for one of the tagging ships here at Russian Mission back in 2002-03, and there hasn't been any of that going on lately, but I do remember that, and you know, something like that would kind of help us in our area through job opportunity, and then help the managers see where these salmon are going, that kind of thing, you know. So, but yes, as far as Russian Mission, you know, everybody's still on idle. Everybody's noticing the effects of the flood. Everybody's worried about the effects of the flood on all, not only salmon, but all the species that we do harvest throughout the year, because we do go after a lot of other little critters out here. So, but yeah, that's about it for us. And thank you.
Great. Thank you, Basil. Do we have anyone else from District Y3, Holy Cross, Shagook, or Ashishin? Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. And if you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to mute and unmute. We'll go ahead and move on to District Y4A, Anvik, Grayling, Calpag, Nalato, or Kaikuk. We'll go ahead and move into the Kaikuk River. Do we have anyone from Huslia, Hughes, Alakakit, Alatna, or Bettles? We'll go ahead and move on to District Y4. Do we have anybody from Galena or Ruby on the line? Okay, we'll move on to District Y5 A and B. Do we have anyone from Tanna, Tanna Rapids, Rampart, or Yukon River Bridge on line?
Yeah, hello, Serena.
Hi, Randy, go ahead.
Yeah, Randy Mayo here, enrolled tribal member of Stevens Village, and also a Yukon River Commission representative for Stevens Village, and I sit on the Executive Council. My fish camp is in 5C near the Yukon River Bridge, and I know it's open. Fishing is open right now, you know, 7.5-inch mesh 24/7 now till here, or I don't know. I got noticed that it closed to 4-inch mesh only. But I haven't been on the river for a couple of weeks. But like the pre-speaker mentioned, high water. So there wasn't too much geese around on, there was no spanners. It start dropping, and normally this time we start getting king salmon in that area, the front runners. You catch a lot of fish between now and 4th of July. So there's still opportunity for us before that closure. Closure happened, but you know, I see the cotton fly and our belief that, you know, the salmon are coming. Yeah, so I haven't fished in many years, you know, like in years past we use fish wheel and before oak fish. But personally, I haven't fished in quite a few years. I gotta get 4-inch mesh net because, you know, you can use 4-inch mesh 60-foot long, and in our area, you're permitted to state regulations. One can have up to 900 feet. So a lot of fishing opportunity in our area that's allowed. I mean, you can get the state mails out permits to every resident. You know, anywhere, any resident of the state could get permit to go up and fish. So, but yeah, I mean, sitting on the fish pen, the annual meeting that was last month, and then participated in a kind of emergency meeting with the Attorney General going against the Alaska Board of Fishery decision. Some action to understood reduce in Area M around the Aleutian Islands area. And like the previous speaker mentioned, I mean, and I also participated in the management and, like the previous speaker mentioned, regime is so broken on the U.S. side. You have federal managers, you have state managers, then you have state of Alaska, use rights, and I know on the Canada side, First Nations have a little different legal side. So then I also know that there's that Yukon River panel, but I'm just, you know, I don't know the details of those working groups, but how much, and I know there's Canadian managers on the line, do they realize all of this from the Bering Sea? But again, I want to go back to the previous speaker who hit the nail on the head that the managers are subject to the territorial government and state of Alaska government and big industry. Those are just some questions if this is even on the discussion point for the Canadian managers and First Nations, if they realize very broken state and federal because of jurisdictions mandated by law between the state and federal government. I took a question that I've been meaning to ask Holly at a few meetings ago, maybe 2 years ago, in one of their reports, a number of incidental Chinook caught on the Yukon River. I've been meaning to ask Holly that that number, were people reporting that? And also too, just one more thing for the managers and Canadian managers that, you know, our traditional knowledge, our elders and ancestors always knew that the Canadian bound fish, we don't catch those in our area because they're out in the middle of the river. They bypass us. What we used to catch, you know, near the shore with set net or fish wiggle, those fish were more local, closer spawning grounds on the Alaska side. So I don't know if the Western science and managers, how much of the traditional knowledge do they take into consideration in the manner that it just noted and put on a shelf, and it doesn't show up anywhere in management decisions, but you know, like a good story. So those are some of the things, and forever remain hopeful we'll be able to fish for Chinook again. You know, we're not after any other little fish but Chinook. You know, you can't live off of a, you know, few other small little cubs in our area. That's all there is. We don't get summer chum. It's too far up the river. So yeah, if the managers on the Canada and Holly could respond to a couple of those questions. So, and one more thing too, I believe in, you know, doing our part to help rebuild the stocks, but, you know, everybody else out in the Bering Sea has to make sacrifices too, and I don't see that happening none too soon, because, you know, they're making a lot of money. The state of Alaska is making money off of the pollock fishery, and, you know, here we are, our whole way of life pretty much gone, you know. So yeah, could respond, you know, just briefly.
Yeah, thanks, Randy, for all your comments. I don't know if you guys can hear okay. This is Holly Carroll, Fish and Wildlife Service. I want to touch on one of the things you kind of said last about. Okay, so just want to check, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, great, Randy. So how we use traditional knowledge is pretty hard to capture in our management. We aren't really able to publish traditional knowledge. Usually that kind of work is done by anthropologists. Not sure. Yeah, somebody said, can you hear us or not?
Testing. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, here.
Mike? Okay.
So people online can hear, but are people on phones able to hear too?
Yes.
I can hear you.
Great. So Randy, yeah, you know, actually that traditional knowledge about the Canadian-bound king swimming deeper in the middle of the channel, that traditional knowledge was taken into regulation way back in the day, and it's kind of why drifting is not allowed in the upper river. I remember Sidney Huntington was a big proponent of sharing that knowledge, and it's kind of why we have drifting in the lower river but not allowed up above in District 5 and up. So it's hard to capture that, and I wish we could do a better job of incorporating your traditional knowledge in ways that you can see and sort of get credit for, as it were. Going back to your question about incidental harvest, yes, the Department of Fish and Game has a wonderful and very extensive 30-year subsistence harvest survey program where, you know, they go door to door, they take a sample of every community's harvest, and they make an estimate for each community. And people are pretty honest about their harvests, and we are still continuing to get some Chinook and chums in the 4-inch net as what we call incidental harvest. Obviously, people are trying to get non-salmon in that gear, and they're getting the occasional king or summer chum in that gear. And we do acknowledge that. We want to try to limit that. That's why we're going to actually close the gill nets down for a 3-week period. You were saying that right now you can still use 4-inch. That closure is coming to your area soon when we think the kings will be there. So at the peak of the king run for 3 weeks, all gill nets are coming out of the water, and that is to reduce that incidental harvest of kings. And in the lower river, the incidental harvest of summer chum too. So we're trying our best to balance that ability for you guys to at least try to get some non-salmon. I know way up where you are, 4-inch at this time of year is not a great time, and you're not getting a lot of non-salmon like they see in the lower river. We apologize for that lack of opportunity based on where you're at. We're trying to make that as fair as we can. As to your comments about the fairness about these closures in other fisheries, I can't personally argue with any of that. And I do just want to once again thank everyone for the hard work and the advocacy that they're doing in those other spaces. I want to thank everyone for their sacrifices. And I also want to point out that there's not a person in this room that is blaming subsistence for these crashes. And I know that Basil mentioned that this punishment, these sacrifices, I mean, these closures are not meant to be a punishment. Subsistence users on this river did not cause this crash. We are just trying to protect what is still coming in now, pretty low numbers. And so we are hoping that while people go out, they just target non-salmon, try to get some food if they can. I know you're saying if we could just get a few Chinook, since that's all you get in the area. I just want to remind people that the last few years, we've only had 20,000-ish kings make it to Canada. If even a few households start to harvest those kings, we're already 1/4 of the number of fish we need to see on the spawning grounds for strong future runs. And so it's just why we can't really allow people to get a few of those kings. We're trying for people to get none of those kings. That's the ideal until we see those runs increase. I don't know if I answered every single question, but I'm happy to stand by if you got more for us, Randy.
No.
Hi, Serena. It's Jacqueline Kendall. Am I coming through okay?
Yes, you are. Go ahead, Jacqueline.
Okay, thank you. And thank you so much for the questions. My phone was cutting out a little bit during it, so I apologize, but I think I got some of it. So, similar to what Holly was indicating, incorporating the traditional knowledge piece, we're working to try and do that in a way that that is holistic and takes into consideration the real privacy and sensitivity of a lot of that information. Recently, groups have been working in Canada on creating a summary of issues facing Canadian origin Yukon River Chinook paper. It's a review of limiting ecosystem and habitat factors. So that holistic holistic approach across freshwater and marine to try to identify some of those factors that I think you were alluding to that aren't necessarily just close to home. It's just a couple of the pieces that I picked up on in your questions there. Apologies if I missed some of them.
Okay, we'll continue with District Y5, B&D, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Fort Yukon, Kokutsik, Unitai, Arch Village, Circle, and Eagle.
Hey, Serena, Andy.
Hi, Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Reports from this area, the river has come up quite a bit in the last 4 or 5 days. Water's running right at the bottom of the cut banks. We're sending tons of firewood downriver for folks that have an opportunity to gather some of that. There's a lot of really nice big trees going down the river. I don't have water temperatures right now. I didn't think to look at that, but it was starting to warm up a little bit. We're starting to get some warmer, sunnier days here, so things are starting to warm up around here. It's been a late spring. As far as the fishing front goes with the high water and all the debris, I had to pull my nets out of the water, just too much debris. And it was pretty dismal anyway, 2 fish in 6 weeks. So pretty devastating, actually. There's been a lot of great discussion today. I just wanted to add a little bit as far as the Yukon River Panel goes. The Yukon River Panel has officially established a communications committee and a traditional knowledge committee. It's been highly talked about for many years. It is a part of the Yukon River Panel, and it is a part of what is going to be used for the rebuilding plan to the extent possible. I think Kenlin, Kendall described it well. I mean, certain aspects of traditional knowledge is very private, but to the extent possible, the hope is that we'll be able to incorporate as much of that into a rebuilding plan on the Yukon River for Chinook and Canadian Fall Chum. And I'd also like to just echo what Holly's saying. I think it's really, really great to see that people are working with managers and trying to abstain from incidental harvest as much as possible. That's really key right now. And I also want people to know that there are a lot of people along the Yukon River drainage and in Bristol Bay and up in the Arctic that are very actively engaged in trying to address the marine issues that we're having. So although it's been pretty disappointing with some of the directions from the Attorney General's office, people need to know that there is a very strong campaign and working group within our region, especially on the Yukon River, to try and continue to push for some of that equality that people are speaking about. And I think that's important for people to know. It's not a vacuum. There are a lot of people really working hard at it. So I guess that's really all I wanted to say at this point in time. I know it's really tough for everybody. I'm really struggling here with the lack of that as well. But we've all got to do our part and always keep thinking about the younger generations. That's who we're doing it for. All right. Thank you. Appreciate the conversations here.
Thank you, Andy. We'll continue with this District Y5 C&D, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Fort Yukon, Chilkeetsuk, Vinitai, Arctic Village, Circle, and Eagle. Do we have anyone else online? Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line.
Hi, Serena. This is Carlissa.
Hi, Carlissa. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. This is Carlissa Tremblay here in Fort Yukon. I'm the surveyor this year, and I just have not much to report besides two households that are fishing, and they've been getting whitefish. They've been sharing with the community, and the water's low. There's cotton blowing in the air, and we've been having good weather. That's my report. Thank you.
Thank you for your report. Again, please press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. If you're using the mute feature on your mobile device, you'll still need to press star 6 to mute and unmute. We will continue with District Y6, Manly, Minto, Nanana, and Fairbanks. Again, calling on District Y6, Manly, Minto, Nanana, and Fairbanks.
Serena, can you hear me?
Yes, Olivia, go ahead.
Hi, Serena. Hi, everyone. Yeah, thank you. This is Olivia Hanahi Irwin. I don't have a specific report coming from Nanana just yet. I haven't heard of any nets being put in. Wheels are parked. But I do have an update. I'm sorry I wasn't able to get unmuted earlier. I wanted to give a short report out for the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission. I want to reintroduce myself to everyone as the new Project and Watershed Operations Manager for the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission. Folks on this call might remember me last year. The last 2 years I worked for YRDFA. And so now I'm over at the Fish Commission. The Fish Commission has hired, I'm not sure the last time Craig gave an update, but the Fish Commission has now hired on a policy and research individual. Jim Simon is working for the Fish Commission now. And after the annual meeting held in early May, our commissioners set some pretty clear directives for the Fish Commission to get out into the villages, continue keeping a pulse on the regulatory process, and begin finding ways for information to continue to be disseminated to our people. So with that, we did have our individual Jim Simon did go to the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council this last month, and he will be giving an update on some information gathered from that meeting on Chinook genetics, as well as pelagic trawl definition, I believe maybe next week. So we'll be giving an update on what went on in that regulatory process. But we're most excited about turning the attention away from the regulatory and management process and back onto our villages. The Fish Commission is aiming to get out to quite a few villages this summer and encourage anybody who has events or local community gatherings that they would like the Fish Commission to attend. We'd love to hear from you. With that, I'd like to take off that hat and then put on my Board of Fish hat really quick. And Randy, to your comments about the AG's opinion, as a Board of Fish member, I have almost as much information as any member of the public. For anybody who's unaware of what's going on, in February, there were quite a few regulations passed with regards to Area M, feigners, and drift fleet that reduced the number of hours and the area in which they could fish. Since that decision happened, recently the Attorney General of the state of Alaska has overturned the Board of Fish decisions, including decisions made in Bristol Bay to protect Inukshuak kings. And there is a lot of uncertainty and lack of information that's going on right now with regards to why the Attorney General overturned those opinions. I've been told that this has never happened in state of Alaska history with the board, so it'll be new terrain for many of us to navigate. I just wanted to share that and let folks know that through this process, I'll continue to update as I get more information. But it's extremely frustrating. All of the regulations from the Arctic Yukon-Kuskokwim meeting are still in effect, and so folks on the Yukon have even further restrictions on their fish wheels, while all of the restrictions from Area M got overturned by the Attorney General's office. And so this is the importance of ensuring that we're keeping the pulse on the regulatory and policy perspective and point of view as we are continuing to build the capacities within our villages to harvest and to manage and steward these resources ourselves. So if anybody has questions with regards to that in my Board of Fish capacity, my phone number is 907-750-4857. And if anybody needs to get in touch or has any questions, please feel free to reach out, and I will be continuing to update this call as I gain more information on it. So thank you all very much for your time. Happy to be on the calls again.
Great. Thank you, Olivia, for your update, and thank you for joining our call today. We will continue with District Y6. Do we have anyone else from Manly, Mentone, and Nanner or Fairbanks?
This,
Hey, Victor. Go ahead.
And then back again. I had a few questions, and but right after that, after Olivia was talking the other day, and it was on the news or the paper, mentioned something about President Donald Trump releasing fisheries native. They said they mentioned Hawaii and the Pacific Ocean fisheries, but they did mention something about natives. It's kind of like they didn't put no names on it, but they sound like they were talking about Alaska. I was wondering if the Area M came right to mind when I was reading that news in the paper. But somebody got bigger ears out there, know that that's even happening on the presidential level. I know that Obama had a person working directly for him that was out in Japan and dealing with Pacific Ocean fisheries. And he came up to Alaska and I met him at the hotel on 7th Avenue there. And then he came to Canada too. So, they have people out there, but I never heard of like this piece of news where the president has opened up regular fisheries for a need. Anyway. And I at this time, thank you everybody for the reports and stuff. Sound like a pretty corrupt down there by Holy Cross and Russian Mission. All I can do is pray for them. But anyway, I think I'm going to interrupt again. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Victor. Good to hear you. Okay, we'll move on into Canada. Do we have anyone from Old Crow, Dawson, Whitehorse, Mayo, Pelly Crossing, CarMax, or Teslin on the line?
Hi, Serena. David Curtis here from Dauphin City.
Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Calling you from, Dauphin City, traditional territories, Toronto, Kitchen. Only thing to report here is sort of parallel to what Andy's experiencing, high water, lots of trees coming down, big ones. No fish, of course, yet here. But I did just want to put the word out that I'm also a filmmaker as well as a former fisher and working with my good friend from Dauphin City, Jackie Olson. We are coming to Alaska working on a documentary film about the collapse of the salmon runs and how it's impacting people on the ground in the communities. So just wanted to say looking forward to visiting communities, specifically in Monarch, St. Mary's, Canada, Rampart, and Fort Yukon and Eagle, and really appreciate hearing from the folks here on the line about all your concerns. And the film is a feature documentary that'll be available both nationally, both in the U.S. and Canada, more specifically for Yukoners and Alaskans, but also internationally, coming out probably next year. And we're going to take a look at amplifying people's voices that are here on the phone right now and get this message out to the world and hopefully bring some changes in legislation and policy and just understanding, too, for everybody along the river and to help the salmon come back.
Great. Thank you, David. I do have a question. What production company are you with?
Yeah, it's called The Last Run, Last Run Films. We're based out of Dauphin City in Whitehorse, and we're doing it as a co-production with the National Film Board of Canada.
Okay.
The Last Run Films Incorporated, sorry. That's the name of the company.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll continue. Yes, go ahead.
Hey, this is Jack O'Kitkun over here in Y1 District. I'd like to say thanks to the Fish and Game that all the king salmon runs have been declined because of gear change. Back in the day when I was growing up, I never heard of gear changes. When the king salmon first started running on the Yukon River, they kept unrestricted methized until the king salmon started getting less and less. Then they used 6-inch or less for subsistence gathering. And during those times, I heard elders speak about when you switch over to a smaller gear from a unrestricted mess size to a 6-inch, you're killing off the king salmon. And I didn't believe that until I thought with my own eyes when I used to camp at along the coastline. And one year we had abundance of king salmon, and then I wanted to catch some summer chums for subsistence to put away for the winter. And then I see big splashes on the net with 6-inch mesh gear. And then when the water went down, my wife and I took a walk. We went to our neighboring camp, and he said he saw the same thing happen. And we saw, while we were walking, we saw a lot of king salmon laying on the beach that were incidentally caught. You tell us to release the fish that are caught. They swim up for a little while, and from all the stress they had from the being caught in the net trying to break free, they get stressed out and they swim for a little while and die. And those elders that I didn't believe, and I understood why all the king salmon were getting less and less ever since they started messing with unrestricted mess size to 6-inch, and that's when the king salmon started depleting. And now it's down to 4-inch. And you talk about sustainability for our next generation. what you're doing is killing off the king salmon, you know, and people are blaming people. You know, I heard this guy blaming the coastal villages, saying that they're killing off our fish. They're taking away our fish. And, it's, you know, we cannot do that. It's because of messing around with what our elders knew. So thank you. Thanks, Chris and Game, for killing off all the king salmon.
Jack, we thank you for your comments. We want to reiterate that please be respectful of one another. Everyone on here online is here to provide information constructively. And we'd just like to reiterate that. Please be respectful of one another. I'd like to also say that, you know, these calls are to help people communicate with one another. This is a huge drainage from the coastal communities all the way to the headwaters in Canada. This space is to be used to try to minimize that conflict with one another and gather right information to be passed along. So we greatly appreciate everyone calling in and providing comments like this, but we'd really like to respect one another. It doesn't matter what hat you wear, who you are. We're all here to learn from one another. Thank you. Again, I'll call on communities in Canada, Old Crow, Dawson, Whitehorse, Mayo, Pelly-Dawson, Carmack, or Teslin. Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to unmute. We'll go ahead and open up the floor for anyone who would like to provide additional comments or questions.
Yes, Serena?
Yes, go ahead, Randy.
Yeah, Randy Mayo here. Subdistrict 5C. And you know, again, I know we're, you know, in conservation mode and on the ground here. Yeah, you know, there's the big government on the Canada side and but I just wanted to talk eyes and the harvest. That when you, and this is kind of like constructive criticism, do that. That at some point when the peer size was being debated, it kept on down. You know, to 4-inch mesh net. And the reason then, you know, would be the Chinook would bump into that little mesh and back up and swim around it. The fisherman knows that a migrant Chinook has one thing in mind, and it's to go upriver. Meaning that, there's a lot of the closures start happening, and the full closure. You know, like I said before, under state regulations, I can have up to 15, 60-foot nets and put them all over the place, and and I can halfway fill up potential caught salmon, legal under, but, you know, historically, I would ask to meet our family needs. You know, this was long ago. So, now it's made 150, but with those little nets, you lose half of that. I'm talking about Chinook. You might catch 20, but you lose forever. They, because they're barely caught. And these are the one. If they're not already dead, they just sink. So I'm just talking about reality here.
Yeah, Randy.
And you, so I just wanted to comment of how discombobulated the varying levels of regulations and the confusion around all of that, you know. So thank you.
Hi, Randy. This is Dina John with Fishing Game. I don't know if folks can hear us. I think we are breaking up real bad, but I do really appreciate your comments. And you're right. If folks do want to go out and put out multiple short 60-foot set nets and load up on kings, they can. The regulations allow that flexibility. But the intent, like when we put these regulations, these restrictions in, is to try to give people the freedom and the opportunity to use that 60-foot short set nets, 4-inch or mesh, smaller mesh to target their non-salmon. And so we always ask folks to use their traditional knowledge to set those gear in area where you're not going to catch salmon. You know, when you're getting those 10 or 20 kings in your net, how many whitefish are you getting? Are you getting more whitefish than kings? If you're not getting more whitefish than kings, then maybe it's not time to have that gear out to be trying to target, you know, what you're getting at that time. So by not restricting it to, you know, just this area or this mouth or this stream, we're really giving folks the flexibility to take that responsibility and use that gear to just target for their non-salmon. Because we don't want to really, really try to micromanage everybody be like this time or whatever. We could also, you know, maybe there's a thing where someone would want to put in a regulation that you have to man your set nets all the time. That was a proposal in another part of the state where you'd have to watch your set net all the time. You know, maybe folks should be checking their nets more often, and if you do get kings, to pull that net or move it or let those fish go. So we're really trying to give folks the freedom to catch their non-salmon and also let the kings go. Try not to target them. Try not to leave your nets out and get a bunch of dead kings. If you're just getting dead kings in your 4-inch, then, you know, maybe think about not using that gear in that place at that time.
Okay, we'll go ahead and continue and open up the floor for any other public comments or questions.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, Basil, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Basil here at Russian, listening in after my river report. A couple of things trickled into my mind, like, you know, I said we bear the brunt of the blame because we feel that way because the bycatch numbers dwarf the amount of salmon entering the river, probably at least times three or four. So, you know, I know the manager's got a job to do. They got a boss to answer to, but at some point, common sense has to kind of help the equation and equal things out. So I'm not saying you guys don't know this, but we have Google nowadays and everybody's kind of on the same page. We all have an idea what's going on. We all have our own opinions, but we all do follow these new rules and regulations that come up. Like the fella just said, you're allowed
X amount of 4-inch nets, 60 foot long. Nobody out here could afford more than one. And if you do, you're living large. Because a lot of times what will happen is we'll set this 4-inch net on our way to some, on our way to harvest some other critter or go pick berries. And then we'll pull it out on our way back. And I just had to throw that out there because it's getting kind of iffy. But I do support a lot of things that I did hear, like the Philodon and Y1. They were saying, using switching gear and getting using different gear to go after salmon, kind of killed off some species. I heard that. I heard that general thought thrown around up this way by a lot of the old folks, especially when they talk about the, like somebody mentioned Sidney Huntington. I remember one meeting or one of the Huntington boys was saying, when the state of Alaska tells us to jump, we ask them how high. They tell us to jump off a cliff, we ask which one. So when commercial fishing for king salmon was going on, we all saw the size of the king salmon getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and we just kept going because, you know, the state said to, and they said it's okay, and the numbers are at a sustainable range. But now look at what happened. And I remember a few years ago when we were allowed to fish for fall fish, and there was also commercial fishing for fall salmon was the last directed commercial fishery on the lower Yukon. I remember I was asking about the sustainability of the fall chum, and I was told that, you know, these numbers are going to sustain themselves and they'll keep coming back where they're at or get stronger. And we all believe that. We all took it to heart, and because there's not much people out here have a degree in the a college degree that, you know, but I just thought I'd throw that out there, but it does kind of feel like we are the only blame because we don't see these rules and regulations extended out to the Bering Sea, to where all the fish are getting slaughtered. Thank you.
Thank you, Basil, for those comments. For the pollock industry, it's the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council meetings that we try to advocate for in reduction of bycatch. And so, you know, we encourage local people to provide comments and testimony to that management regime. And so when Jim Simon provides his report next week on what went on during this last meeting, that'll be a time to ask questions. Right now, we really want to focus on the Yukon River. Again, it's not, like Holly said, it's not placing blame to the subsistence users. It's just one way to try to get the Chinook to the headwaters. And we are working and advocating in other areas and other spaces to try to minimize intercept fisheries and bycatch. And so we love your comments, you know, we hear you, and we just want to capture that and use that, or even you provide those comments to the right management areas where they do make those decisions, mm-hmm. such as the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council or the Board of Fisheries. We will open the floor for any additional comments or questions.
Yeah, Victor here.
Hi, Victor. Go ahead.
I was going to ask about the Nelson Island fisheries. When the guy was saying the Chesson King over there, it's like a good sign for the Yukon River. Do our fish swim when they're coming back up to the river? Do they swim kind of close to that area? Or he was just swimming because they're catching good king salmon. History says that we might too. And also, on the last comment, you're talking about Cubs fan, you got to react. We've got to manage with the numbers of fish down and everything, but I still like the hull too. That's a, and let's know that we're here, the North Pacific Fishery, and move us out to, with the ocean fisheries. I appreciate all the transparency, and but yeah, the, it seems time we can testify. Let's get out there and testify. We got to let them know that we're here in 20-some villages, and it's good, there, good that we offer candidates to speak on our intercom. I'm willing to hear from them. I want them to hear from them. I know they got to have concern. And that was it. Thank you. I'm a Bessie.
Thank you, Victor.
Hi, Serena. Could I respond to Victor really quick?
Yes, you can. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, Uncle Duke, thanks for bringing that up. I'm grateful that someone is, that we have cross-regional conversation going on along the, between the river and our other communities along the coast. That's super important for us to maintain that communication and can be a good indicator of what's coming to us. For people's information, Nelson Lagoon is one of the few areas within area, that Area M Aleutian Islands fishery that actually does have its own local runs. So the indicator for Nelson Lagoon having, you know, good herring and good Chinook numbers, it doesn't necessarily mean that those are our Chinook that are coming in high volumes. However, it can be an indicator of, you know, maybe good food sources in the water, maybe positive water temperatures for the fish and the success of their health. So it can be an indicator for the ocean health in general, but it's not a necessary black and white correlation with how our salmon run, our Chinook run is going to be doing, because they're not necessarily fishing on Yukon Chinook. So just wanted to make that note, and good point and good question.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you guys for joining this week's teleconference. Greatly appreciate your time and your comments, your questions. Please spread the word next week, 1 o'clock Tuesday. And good week, everyone. Thank you.
Hi, Serena.
Yes.
Mom, I run at my phone.
I'm sorry, come again.
Norma Ivana Marshall, I'm currently on your Waikiki Delta Rock. We're listening in here at the Native Village of Marshall. We had a question. Can some of my coworkers receive salmon from the Kuskokwim to process on the Yukon?
Hold on. No, this isn't working.
Oh, just come over
yeah.
there. Okay. So Norma, the real managers to talk to for Kuskokwim fish are the federal manager, Spencer Reardon, and the state manager, Sam Decker. But the short answer is, if a federally qualified user fishes for those fish in the Kuskokwim below Aniak, so in the federal fishery, they can share with whoever they want. I don't believe they're limiting that, but they do have to be a federal fisher over in the Kuskokwim, but then yeah, they can share that fish with family members wherever they want to. So if you've got a generous family member who can get some sockeyes and things on the Kuskokwim and share with your Yukon family in Marshall, that's perfectly acceptable from what I understand.
Thank you. I really appreciate your quick response, and have a good start of those spring season.
Great. Thank you, Norma. Good to hear you.
Thank you.
Again, thank you guys for your questions and comments during this call. We'll connect again next week, Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Thank you for your time.
Hey.
Bye, Victor.